This is Scenic Roots talking writing. Our guest again this week is poet and essayist Sherry Poff. Sherry teaches writing and creative writing to sophomores and seniors in high school. A founding member of the Chattanooga Writers Guild, she's widely published herself. One of her recent essays, titled Exploration, won the Chattanooga Writers Guild's writing contest in June. It's a story about a trip to Cadillac Mountain in Maine. Before she read the story, we started talking about the weather.
It is just stunning. It's absolutely stunning. And it's, you know, I tried to describe it a little bit in that piece in The Pulse, but it's difficult to describe, you know, like so many things. If you see it for yourself, it's so much more meaningful.
Two things occurred to me to ask you about, really. We live surrounded by mountains here in Chattanooga.
Yes.
You grew up in the mountains.
I did.
But that was in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so from Chattanooga to West Virginia to Maine is going further and further north. And the natural world looks quite different, I would imagine.
It does.
It feels different, too.
Well, and here's the thing I love to do. In the spring or in the fall, you can really see this. To begin here in Chattanooga and start driving north, let's say it's April. When I start driving north, it's as if I'm going back in time, you know, because I'll leave here. The trees have green leaves. The azaleas are blooming. And as I go farther north, you know, there are just the beginnings of leaves. And, you know, now the daffodils are blooming. And it's and of course, in the fall, you know, you can see that change as well. So that's something I love. And I tell you, well, the state song of West Virginia is called the West Virginia Hills, yet it's called the Mountain State. But one can also really see the difference in the elevation of the hills here. And as you get on into, you know, like we're just in the Appalachian foothills here, as you get on into the Appalachians, you can really see a big difference. Long about out in East Tennessee, going into Virginia, I usually go up 81. You can really see, you know, begin to see they get kind of wilder, you know, taller and deeper valleys and things like that. And
these are old mountains here, aren't they?
I think so.
Yeah. So what was your sense in Maine? Did it feel particularly wild there?
You know, it was very similar. My daughter, who lived in Maine for 7 years, told me that the people and the landscape reminded her very much of West Virginia. And, of course, the being that near the ocean makes a big difference. And it is colder.
It is, isn't it? Elizabeth has this abiding affection for Maine because she doesn't like the heat of the summer, you know. And so the other day, maybe it was Sunday, it was really cool. It must have been upper 60s maybe, you know, for Chattanooga in the summertime.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, really? Wow, this is great. She said, well, this is what Maine's like all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, oh my God, if it's like London then.
Yeah.
So if it's like that in the summer, in the winter, it's going to be cold. You know, and that's a brutal place to live, you know.
Yes. My child, who lived there for 7 years, said that she had stayed as long as she could, and she needed sunshine. But she went back, you know, she went back this year for a visit, because in the summer, and what they say, at least what she tells me, I don't know, it's what all Mainers say, but that they say there are three seasons in Maine: winter, mud, and July. So the one time we were there in June, and it might have been the same time I was writing about, and there were people walking on the street in overcoats. You know, and I had taken long sleeves and a jacket because I thought I'm going to Maine, but I had to put on layers to be comfortable.
So, in June?
In June, yes. So, yeah, winter, mud, and July. I guess I was in the mud there in mud season, maybe.
a few years ago, that was quite a few years ago, actually, now think about it. So we decided we're going to go to Dublin. And this is in June. And we get there. Well, predictably, of course, it's raining and hard, too. It's almost like you battle the elements in a place like that. London's not quite like that. It rains a lot in London, but it tends to be a kind of almost like a misty rain a lot of the time. So it's annoying, but because if you want to have a picnic or something, but it's not any big deal. But it was lashing down in Dublin when we got there. And then the next day, it was on the weekend, so the next day we were out walking and the wind was blowing and the rain was blowing straight at us. And I'll never forget this kid in one of the stores. He said, "Oh, so what do you think of all summer?" You know, they just hated it. You know, the weather was so inhospitable.
Oh.
And I could relate because growing up in London, I felt the same way.
Sure.
You know, we'd watch Flipper or something like that on the television. Like, oh, man, look at that. What must it be like to live in a place like that? You know?
Sunny and warm.
Yeah. And so... I guess if you want the, Cliff Notes version, that's how I ended up here. would you care? Do you have a copy? I can give you my copy if you'd like to. I'd like for you to read it, though.
Okay, I do not have a copy of it. I do not. I could use yours.
Yeah.
All of it?
It's not that long, is it?
No, I suppose not.
If you don't want to read all of it, that's fine too. Maybe we shouldn't read all of it, huh?
You know what?
Read enough to get somebody interested.
I can go right through it if you want me to.
It's your call on the show. Whichever way you'd like to do it.
I'll go ahead and read it. Northeast. Several years ago, I traveled with my husband and two of our grown children to Cadillac Mountain in Maine, a treat I had anticipated for some years since learning that it was reportedly the first spot in the United States touched by the sun each day. We missed sunrise on Cadillac, but one afternoon we drove up the road that snakes around the mountain to the summit. Each of us enjoyed a walk atop massive cliffs and along a paved trail overlooking the ocean, taking in the beauty of the place in our own silence, and finally gathering for pictures. It was spectacular, even on a cloudy day. Wind-blown pines and shrubs on the mountain's side seemed to blend with the green further down and spill right out into the Atlantic, creating islands of emerald and jade in the blue-gray water. But we were not alone on the mountaintop that day in June. Many other visitors had arrived to enjoy the view and experience the magic of the place. Online guides to Acadia National Park, of which the mountain is a part, boast of the accommodations for tourists who visit the site, noting the large parking lots, restrooms, and even a gift shop. When one has the mountain and the sea, I have to ask, who needs to shop? In 1960, author Wallace Stegner composed his wilderness letter to members of the Wildland Research Center of Berkeley, California. Stegner's main point in his now-famous letter, commenting on the upcoming report of the Outdoor Recreation Resources Review Commission, even the title oppresses, was that the idea of wilderness is necessary to American freedom, to the notion that we have a place to escape the noise and pollution of our everyday lives. But the author was not interested in opening up more spaces for fishing or camping or even hiking. What America needs, he claimed, what people need, is a place free from the taint of human smells and waste, a place that we know is there as a buffer against crowds and noise, against domination by humankind, even if we never go there. In 2014, on a road trip with my 85-year-old mother-in-law, Dorothy, I whiled away hours on the big tour bus reading Bill Bryson's A Walk in the Woods. Bryson's tale about his experience on the Appalachian Trail with his buddy Stephen Katz is funny, informative, and impossible to put down. I read it all the way from Princeton, West Virginia to Niagara Falls, pausing occasionally for meals and chats with my traveling companions. After a quick drive across eastern Canada with stops in Toronto and Quebec City, The bus headed south back toward the heart of Appalachia. One whole morning we rolled through New Hampshire and Vermont right alongside the mountains. Traveling down the highway with soaring slopes out the left window, I mused while Dorothy dozed. Here, a variety of tree species creates a seeming carpet of green, but looks are deceiving, and I recalled Bryson's stories of rocky trails and steep vistas. I can't help but wonder, I said to one of our group as we stepped off the bus to get some much-needed exercise, who might be walking on that mountain ridge right now? I was standing on an asphalt parking lot next to a noisy bus emitting smelly fumes, but up on the mountain, under the shelter of oaks, hickory, and maybe even some chestnuts, the path was surrounded by birdsong and fresh air. The knowledge of its presence was like a secret promise, like the tiny shell one carries home from the beach in the sandy bottom of a dress pocket. For much of the past year, we have been trapped by an enemy we cannot see. Crowds are discouraged, even forbidden. In a time when loving my neighbor has meant staying away from my neighbor, I learned to lean more heavily on the distant view, the view of the trees across the road, the blue sky overhead where crows and the occasional hawk move about unhampered by boundaries. I look to the hills in my East Tennessee home and my mind travels northeast, past fields and farmland, along river valleys and up I-77 through the tunnels, Big Walker Mountain and East River. Here the air is light and fresh. Though it is midsummer, wild honeysuckle fills the evenings with fragrance and nights are cool enough for a sweater. Along the ridges, fireflies dot the evening with tiny lights, and barred owls engage in long conversations filled with laughter. I search the now dark sky for familiar stars not visible near cities, but sharp and bright here in the hills. And far to the north, way up on Cadillac Mountain, the edge of America is slowly turning to face the sun for another day. Wallace Stegner noted that while early Americans were working their way west across the continent, the wilderness was working on them, shaping the American conscience and showing us that there is value in what we leave alone, what we choose to leave wild. The wilderness is a promise, assurance that when we have the time and the leisure and the freedom, there is a place we can go, even if only in our minds, a place where green and blue melt together in the distance, and we won't need a gift shop.
I love that. Thank you. One of the first songs, American songs, that I really like listening to was Route 66. And in some ways, around the same time, well, probably a little later, I started reading Jack Kerouac. Mm-hmm. And those two cemented in my mind what America is to me. It's movement of what, you know, the notion that I often traveling through this country, try to imagine what it must have looked like to the people who first mm-hmm. came here.
Oh yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And that notion that, well, what would it be like to not know what's on the other side of that hill?
You know,
it's not on a map.
Right.
Nobody's been there to come back and tell us about it or say that this is where they live, you know.
That would be remarkable. I think about that, too. When I drive along the interstate, I think, you know, here where this road is was once woods or possibly a meadow or something. Right. And there was a time, of course, when the Appalachian Mountains was the western boundary. You know, I had the opportunity this summer to go to St. Louis. I'd always wanted to go to St. Louis since I was a little girl, see the arch. You know, and that was the Mississippi River. So it was the Appalachian Mountains, then it was the Mississippi River. And you know, I can see how to people who traveled on foot or on horseback or in a wagon, it just seemed unending. Like you could just keep going forever.
And that has a profound effect on your psyche, I think.
It must, yes.
Because I grew up on an island, you know. I know what that, how it feels to know that if you drive more than 60 miles, there's no more road.
Wow, right? Yeah. That's interesting.
Well, the other thing that it occurred to me when you were talking was that idea of the lockdown, and we have to content ourselves with what we can see out of the windows. Mm-hmm. We were talking before about getting older. And I think one of the things about getting older, which is quite, I don't know what the adjective is actually, to be honest, but it feels as if we've come full circle. Children have a fairly tightly prescribed area they know, don't they?
Yes.
Where we can travel, you can ride your bike or whatever it is.
Yes.
Or walk. It has to be close enough. You can either ride your bike there or walk there. If it's any further than that, then it's probably outside of your boundaries. And as we get older, the world starts shrinking again and we're back to that again, you know. And I haven't reached that point yet, so I'm not quite sure what that feels like.
I haven't either. But, one of my daughters keeps telling me I have to go to Chicago. And she said to me, maybe a couple of years ago, you never went to Chicago. I said, my life isn't over. Give me time. So
she wants to make sure you catch all those things on your bucket list.
I guess so.
I've been to Chicago a couple of times. It's cold. It was in March. One time we went there and it was still snowing and
Well, I've been near Chicago. My daughter and I, the same one, went to Wheaton because she was looking at Wheaton College as a possibility. And so Wheaton is just on the outskirts of Chicago. Yes, it was March and the snow was deep and the wind was biting and
the wind was wicked.
There was just a tiny bit of sunshine and people were sitting outside. And you know, Sarah and I were just rushing to get inside. I would probably really love visiting there in a warm season. That's what I'll aim for.
Sherry Poff is a member of the Chattanooga Writers Guild. This is from a virtual meeting with her colleagues in the creative fiction and writing group. Before reading a poem, she talked about what she felt made for good writing.
Poetry particularly can require a second reading. And that's okay. But I should have a sense of a message when I finish reading it. You know, I want words that seem to be the right words, a precise use of language. I guess that's, you know, that's a short way of saying what I think is good writing. Because I think a well-written poem deals with truth of some kind. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a narrative poem, you know, Song of Hiawatha or something, that just tells a story. But most of the time, I think poetry deals with some kind of truth.
This is the poem by Sherry that was published by the East Lake Language Association in the summer of 2020 during the pandemic.
It's called March 1st. Out of school for bad weather. I dice a potato, feel the wet velvet on my fingers, scrub and slice two carrots with sunburst centers, frozen peas, white corn, pungent celery leaves, and last September's cherry tomatoes, chopped and frozen for the day I would need to believe in summer. Pot simmering, I step into near darkness. The day's gloom gives way to pink marble behind wet black branches and the faintest hint of a crescent moon. Daffodils and pears are in bloom. Bright spears of forsythia pierce the gray blanket of evening. As hungry, I turn home. Steaming fragrance welcomes me. Against the side of the pot, my spoon's silver edge easily cuts through a chunk of potato. I ladle the promise into my bowl.
Last week, Sherry quoted Wendell Barry's advice to a writer. This poem is another example in which she takes his advice, writing a poem that celebrates everyday life by catching a few moments. It's a theme she returned to when the other members asked her about the poem.
When did you write that? And what was the situation? What inspired it?
Well, it was not this past March, but the previous March, I really was out of school for bad weather. It was a gloomy day. I started a pot of soup and I was peeling the potatoes and chopping the carrots and doing all these things. I was just really kind of immersed in all the smells and the feelings and the, it was quiet. I was working by myself. And so all of these images just kind of piled up. And then I went for a walk, just as the poem describes. And I thought, Wendell Berry said or wrote that sometimes when you're trying to write a poem, what you need to do is just describe what it is you see. And don't worry about trying to make it sound a certain way. Just describe it the best you can. And then you can tinker with it and put in line breaks and things like that. But that's what I did here. I thought, I'm just going to describe my evening making this pot of soup and taking a walk. And then that was the result.
You can find many of Sherry's poems online. Just Google her. The easiest way, Chattanooga writer, and then her name, Sherry, Sherry Poff, Poff. This is Talking Writing on Scenic Routes on listener-supported public radio in Chattanooga.